everybody was very quiet, and then I had to stop you from talking. All right, we want to call the February 23rd, 2026 meeting of the Claremont County Public Library Board of Trustees order. They have a roll call, please.
Ms. Doss?
I am here.
Mr. Ramos?
Here.
Ms. Wade?
Here.
Ms. Kosica?
Here.
Mr. Humphrey?
Here.
Ms. Vaugh?
Here.
Ms. Schluter?
Here.
Excellent. All right, let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And yay, Team USA for winning the hockey.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I look at the flag and I'm just like,
men
yes.
And women.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, men and women.
Yes. Okay, let's see here. So I am looking for a motion to approve the December 15, 2025 minutes as mailed. I will say there's one correction that needs to be made to those, and that is when we were naming the committees. Help keep me straight here, Chris, because I forgot what I even sent to you. We did not
all
do
all present in favor.
An all present in favor for the budget committee. In the minutes, so that needs to be added into the minutes.
We did it, but we didn't note it in the minutes.
That's correct. It happened in the meeting, it just wasn't reflected in the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as corrected.
Thank you. Mr. Humphrey makes a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Ramos seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion passes. Do we have any public participation this evening?
No.
No public participation. Thank you. All right, guys, we're going to move the agenda around a little bit because we had to cancel our January meeting because of severe weather, so we're doing double duty tonight. But we do have an item on the agenda that has guests, so we are going to move up the Bethel roof, which is under J for old business. We're going to move that up to the top. So I'm fairly certain you do not want to sit through Board of Trustee training and all the other fun things that we're going to do later today. So I believe our fiscal officer is going to tee us up with her mic. There you go.
Let the record show that the following bids were received in the Office of the Fiscal Officer for the Claremont County Public Library until 12 p.m. local time on February 5th, 2026. The Fiscal Officer, upon request of the Claremont County Library Board of Trustees, opened the bids and publicly read the bids relating to the Claremont County Public Library Bethel Roof Recover. We had one bid from Imbus for $484,420. And then we had another bid from RJK Roofing, $356,500. Those were only two bids that we had received.
I think the paper says $331,500. Is that correct?
Yes, there's the $25,000 allowance
okay.
for each one included in that.
And
I'm assuming that's correct, right? We had that allowance on?
Yeah, that allowance is included in their bid.
It is included.
So the total is $331,500.
Yes.
I apologize. You're right. It is $331,500 for RJK and $459,420 for
MS. And just to clarify, we actually did receive three bids, but one was submitted digitally, so it did not meet the spec, correct?
When was it received digitally?
Well, his car exploded on the way down, and so he tried to send it, but we, according to the way it was posted, according to the bid guidelines, we only accepted it if it was in person, so.
I just wanted to.
Is that how it was advertised?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right, so. Tonight, we have the opportunity to ask questions about the bid and about the questions that were asked of the bidding companies, if you will. Any comments or questions about the process or about the responses that were included in your packet? And I'll preface this too with my understanding is that the building committee will have a meeting between now and our March board meeting just to firm up any of their questions and so that they can make their recommendation of which company to contract with. And we'll do that process in the March meeting. So this is just talking about the bid process, talking about the submissions, and asking any questions that we may have.
Thank you. So we'll waiting until the next meeting to delay the process.
We have to, per the process, the way I understand it, right? The county prosecutors.
We have 60 days. You have 60 days to approve the bid, and this was the guidance of council
to follow this protocol.
So this is our timeline, proposed timeline, that we didn't have in the packet. Thank you. Okay. The timeline wasn't attached. I didn't see it in the attachment in that email. Was it in there? Did I miss it?
No, it was. I sent it later on this afternoon. It was provided by THP this morning, so I forwarded it this afternoon. So they can make a recommendation to the board tonight as a part of the recap of their report.
And their report was included in the packet. So it looks like RJK is the recommended company. Do you want to say that up here?
I can.
It does matter, yes.
Lynn's going to come take care of it for you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. My name is Mitchell again, THP. So we, after receiving the bids, we began a vetting process, and specifically with RJK, who was the low bidder between RJK and Invis. And we started with just some initial questions based on some feedback we had from our office in Cleveland that had worked with them on a recent job, and just also in review of their line items on their bid in comparison to Invis, and also our estimate. Just trying to kind of hone in on, the adequacy of their bid and ensuring that what was intended to be on the drawings and in the design is included in their bid. And then we had a follow-up meeting with them two Fridays after the bids were submitted, Chris, some representatives from the county were on the call, and the contractor RJK, as well as their subcontractor and the manufacturer they're using for the liquid applied coating product, were all on the call. They had upwards of, I believe, close to 10 people on the call. They also had their project team that will be managing the project, as well as the foreman and the superintendent. So they were very well represented. Lastly, before we can get to any questions, they did provide references for recent liquid applied coating projects that they've completed. And all the references had great things to say about them. Said very similar things that the THB Cleveland office had to say. They were very responsive and very knowledgeable in the roofing aspect, and fixed any issues that came up. And they've had a lot of success with liquid coatings in general with their roof systems.
Okay.
So, all that being said, we recommend that RJK bid is accepted and awarded, and you guys move forward with them as the contractor to complete the scope of work.
And just to confirm, what is the follow-up period in the event there are any issues with the work for them to come out and fix it? Yeah, guarantee. Thank you.
I believe you've got a, you're going to get a 20-year warranty system for from them and the manufacturer.
Okay.
It is typically a, like a, I guess, like a mixed duration where if there's any sort of issues that come up within a certain time period, like I think it's 5 years, the contractor will be on the hook.
Got it.
And then outside of the 5-year range, the manufacturer will be on the hook to complete any repairs or make right whenever issues come up.
Got it. Thank
and then there's a general, there's a couple of different, you know, there's we've got masonry work, there's a 2-year warranty for that. There's some sheet metal work, which I believe is a 2-year warranty, and then there's a general 1-year workmanship warranty for general items that they'll be completing.
So how can there be, or why is there $130,000 difference between them and Embus and $150,000 difference between your estimate and their bid?
That's a good question. So Embus, in general, is a very has a very high notoriety in the local market. That does come at a price. So we do expect when we see their numbers when they're quoted, we expect them to be high. Specifically looking at the bid breakdown, RJK had much lower material costs from the liquid applied coating manufacturer, which Embus and RJK are using, submitted the same manufacturer. So I'm not 100% certain how they're getting their material costs so low, but we did bet that the low bidder RJK is has the right estimated product amount of product needed to get the coverage rate for the coating system. So there's not a bust in their calculations when they were doing takeoffs or anything. A couple things could be at play. There's scheduling, could be scheduling conflicts. For example, with Embus, they could be booked and be kind of mailing it in, as we say, and not submitting a bid, or they're busy enough where they're not looking for the work, and vice versa. RJK could be looking to expand their market. They're based out of Cleveland with a satellite office in Columbus, for that reason, their GCs are low for all that stuff, but we talked through the logistics for how they'll be mobilizing their crew on a weekly basis, and everything seemed to be inclusive in their bid. So it could be a variety of things, but through the vetting process and through all the questions we've talked about and all the details, it seems that they have what is intended to be included in the project covered in their bid.
So the cost of materials as opposed from their bid and your estimate, that's where the big difference comes
in. That's the biggest, notable difference that's documented. And then, you know, for example, the first line item, RJK, their general conditions and their permit fees mobilization costs are only $5,000 compared to Embus, who's a local company, at roughly $40,000. Some contractors just have preferences for how they distribute that front-end cost throughout their bid. It just kind of depends on. We have contractors that prefer to kind of build that into their other work items for whatever reason. It just is a kind of a preference thing for how people submit their bids. So, but the biggest difference that I can note from their bid was the material cost as well as some of the subcontracting costs related to the masonry work.
Yes, Ms. Kasika.
Your estimate,
yep,
and the apparent low bidder's estimate in several areas is considerably a difference of,
mm-hmm,
which I thought, okay, what is it they're doing? that you said was going to be $112,000 in your estimate and a differentiation. The difference in the Stanley's sea metal roof coating of $140,000 approximately, and then the escalation of the $30,000 differentiation in the coating and the masonry repair, and what, I mean, the disparity is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So what?
The estimate, I wanted to honor it because it was done, and then it didn't exactly align with the bid form. So, for example, in the THP estimate, the large line item for the general conditions, I had to kind of shift some items, some costs around that were like buried in some very like detailed parts of the project that didn't exactly translate to the bid form.
But you provided the estimate before we went to bid, correct?
Yeah, which is the $485,000. Yeah, so it totaled to that. And then just in reviewing of kind of how we got to the estimate, I had to put some of those funds somewhere to get that back to that $485,000 because it didn't exactly line up with all of the different, I guess, items that are also there. The standing seam metal roof coating, we base it off of just historical documentation that we had on recent projects. We base it off of some specifically some coating systems that were put down in the area, also out on the East Coast, and that is what we were showing, what we were seeing from a unit cost perspective, and it was just much higher than what the contractor was able to get it done for at this stage.
So the bid itself, you were talking about some things weren't in the bid. Is that we are very confident that your assessment of what work needs to occur is reflected in the bid?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. So we're not, we don't have any gaps.
And then from an estimating perspective, we just tend to get very detailed, and sometimes those details don't always align with just the bid form.
Okay.
So. The bid form is kind of simplified to make it easy for contractors to bid, and to get to that final estimate, there's just a little bit more of a breakdown in the background that is done to get the final estimate completed.
Gotcha.
Were these eight items individually listed in the bid document for the bidders to bid on?
Yeah, this was the bid form that you're looking at, essentially. Those items.
So the roof coating that RJK is talking about putting on, is that the brand and the type of coating that you had estimated when you put yours in?
No, we specified a different product, and the product they submitted through the approved substitution process we found was comparable, and it is a Henry product. We specified as the basis of design a different manufacturer called Sika. And after review of the product data and all the accessories and everything, found it to be acceptable. There was a third product that was submitted as a proposed substitution that we didn't accept due to some questions that we had that were outstanding. But we're confident that the Henry product that they're using meets the specification that we submitted, which allowed substitutions to be proposed.
We authorize substitutions or alternates for each and every one of these categories that you have combined and whatnot?
Yeah, so in each specification, technical specification that outlines what material we would like to see installed, there is flexibility for them to submit alternate products. There's a lot of different roof coating systems out there and different roof manufacturers. We just specify that it has to meet or exceed.
So you gave an example.
This
is what we prefer, but
yes.
we'll take a look at alternates and consider them.
Yep, and it's usually it is the responsibility of the contractor and the associated manufacturer to prove that it's equal or more or better product.
So the alternative was, if you didn't agree with the alternatives they submitted, then they were obligated to go with what the suggested product was?
You could. We clarified that they could still submit bids with products that weren't formally approved via substitution, and we would, if they were the low bidder and they had submitted a different product that wasn't on the substitution list or the basis of design, they could still submit their bid to not keep it too closed, and we would then again review it at that stage.
Consider it, could
reject their bid given they were submitting outside of approved.
So the alternative they submitted was on the alternative list that would be acceptable to you all?
Correct, yes. We issued an addendum that formally accepted the that substitute product.
And I assume the addendum went out before the bid opening.
It did, yes. It may
72 have hours prior to?
Yes, it went out, I believe, more than 72 hours prior to. They all noted that they had received the addendum.
Acknowledged.
Is there a warranty that comes along with the roof coating?
20 years. 20 years. Yeah.
For the manufacturers.
Manufacturer, yeah, and the manufacturer and the contractor kind of, I don't know if it's technically a joint and several warranty, but the manufacturer will kind of cover the 20-year total warranty, and the contractor will warrant the product for 5 years from the date of substantial completion.
So could you explain the word kind of?
Kind of, as in like the joint and several warranty issue?
About the fact that the contractor will do 5 years and the manufacturer will do the rest of the story, kind of.
It's I think what I meant to say is that we sometimes include language that specifies they submitted joint and several warranty that ties the two manufacturers together. I'm finding with roofing systems it's a little different, and it's understood that for the warranty, the manufacturer and the contractor is licensed to put down this product, so they are sticking their neck out in a way. The manufacturer is letting them put this product down. And if any issues arise in those first 5 years where it is likely maybe due to workmanship, the contractor will cover it. And then for the 15 years after that, the manufacturer will cover that warranty period, even if it's just workmanship issues related to that, which in that turn, you know, they, for that reason, the manufacturer may decide to not allow that contractor to work anymore if they continue to have issues. So
Is 20 years the acceptable period of time or the usual customary reasonable time?
That's actually the higher end for a liquid coating system. So we specified a very high fixed system that gets you the 20-year warranty. Whereas we could have specified lower to get you a lower warranty. It would have been likely cheaper. But the 20-year for a liquid system is probably the highest that you would see. For other roofs, it would be different for roofing systems. But for a liquid system, 20-year is pretty high.
I have a couple questions here, too. Being in a job where we deal with third-party vendors a lot, and we have agreements between us, another party who then subcontracts, the warranty itself with the manufacturer, is that going to be tracked back to the library, or is that with that contract? Like, who will hold that warranty?
You will.
Between the manufacturer. So that'll be the manufacturer and the library system.
Yes.
Okay, good. And then I have to ask, because I'm in compliance, does THP have any relationship with RJK at all?
No.
Have you worked with them before in any way?
Not myself, no.
Okay.
I have to ask. No, I mentioned they won a public bid job last summer that our Cleveland office was the consultant for, and so had some advice or input on how they operated.
Okay, gotcha. Any other questions? Knowing that the building committee is going to be meeting between now and the March meeting to review in a little more depth and make the recommendation to the board on who to sign a contract with.
Well, that you'll be at that meeting.
That's a good question.
We can work with you to have you at the meeting if you would like to have him there.
I anticipate some pretty detailed questions. I mean, so if possible.
And if it's something that we can do via email as well, those detailed questions, and then the building committee can discuss however we need to do it.
Sounds good.
Does that work for you?
Okay. Yep. Yep. If you have any questions come up in the meantime, you can send them to me.
Okay. Any other questions while we have them here?
In as much as when the budget committee met last year for the capital projects and we established a $400,000 sum for the roof replacement or roof improvements or roof repair, and it looks as if this amount, including the $25,000, I'm going to call it, allowance for change orders, is what I'm guessing that amount is there for. Is it necessary for us to do anything different in as much as there was a carryover of that? I saw it in January's, I saw it in February's carryover for that particular purpose, so that we would not be in a situation where we would need to take any other action.
My thought would be that we retain that $400,000 until all is said and done.
Absolutely.
Because we don't know what's going to happen.
We keep that line item for services rendered.
Correct.
I assumed that that was part of it and whatever, but we're
right.
I'm not looking to reduce that amount. I'm just saying to you, in order for us to move forward after the building committee meets and brings the recommendation forthwith, that we would be able to secure the necessary purchase order or whatnot that we would need as it relates to RJK, whoever they are. Sounds like the former soon.
Judy, as far as I know, that is already, that $400,000 is in the capital fund.
Without question, yes. Yes, I know that.
But to spend that, we would have to reappropriate that this year, correct?
I don't think so, because you carried it over, right?
I thought we carried it over.
I'm unfamiliar with that. I'm unfamiliar with the process of that. So I would have to.
I think I'm right, but yes, you're the fiscal officer.
Probably sure that you are. So but let me back that up before I make a commitment. Yes.
The great thing. I believe we're going to try and schedule a budget committee meeting before the next meeting as well.
In the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And before the March meeting.
Before the March meeting.
So in the next 4 weeks, we're going to schedule a budget as well.
All the committees are meeting
before March. We're making up for missing January. So
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying.
No. I think we can have some additional budget
that meeting questions. March 16th, and there's exactly 5 days left in this month. So that's 3 weeks. You know, in order to have met and made a determination.
Because we're a week late for this month.
What's correct.
Because we're
for this
meeting,
so we have
because of the holiday, we're meeting later. Yeah.
We're not late. We're right on time. As we were.
We're the as approved. Okay, so we've got a couple things we need to follow up on, just to make sure that we don't need to reappropriate the $400,000 for the roof.
I've never been.
I thought we carried it over. I think we're okay, but we'll double check.
I may have to call you.
Building committee is going to meet. If they have questions for you, Mitchell, it may be in person, it may be via email or on the phone, so that we can make the most use of everybody's time and not, be cognizant of time.
This that was just passed out regarding
the timeline.
Project timeline,
yeah.
Indicating that it looks like the completion date is May 31st, and that is if we award it at the March meeting or if we award it at the April, because the April
you would
meeting
have
would
to reward it at the March meeting.
We have to
give it
the
60 days.
In order to proceed,
yeah,
the
60 days.
So
yeah.
We're basically talking about, I'm guessing, 60 days in order to complete it.
And that's weather permitting, right? Mm-hmm. Because they won't come out and spray the roof if it's what? Winds, where did I read that?
Winds
are greater than
moisture sensitive material.
20 miles an hour, and if the rain is greater than a 30% chance, which is Cincinnati, and we know what weather's like in the spring. So this is an estimated completion time frame.
Yeah, I can speak on that. I think once some contractors will may not proceed with allocating or finalizing their schedule until they have an awarded contract.
Sure.
So
I mean, makes sense.
The time frame, in theory, wouldn't change. It may just slide a little bit if they move some stuff ahead.
And I assume that we will be getting routine updates for whomever we award the contract to on their progress and any delays due to weather, so that we're aware of how we're tracking.
And who's going to be accountable for on-site that it is being done in accordance with the bid specifications?
That would be me.
That would mean we're going to get regular updates from you, right?
Yes, we will. We'll have regular progress meetings and issue those notes.
And in concert with our building department.
Yes, so I would expect somebody would be represented at the progress meetings. And then
no suspect, there will be.
I don't want to speak for anybody that I'm not in charge of, so they're in charge of me, so I just do what they say.
And then what are we doing with the Bethel branch during this time?
It's going to be open.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They've ensured the safety of the ingress and egress and okay. Access to the parking lot, so.
All right.
Is it going to be any type of restriction on the building, or is it?
No. We're making sure there's not anything being held out in the parking lot or anything like that. Not that there would be, but.
So this time schedule was based on our passing or accepting a bid.
The March meeting. Right.
I don't know if they knew exactly when an awarded contract was expected to be delivered to them. So I can't speak on what their assumption was made when they issued that schedule. But I would think that they were maybe I'm expecting that they were hoping to have an awarded contract sooner than later, and that March may be a little later than they anticipated, and that their schedule may...
They were definitely expecting it within 60 days, because that's how
yes.
Why they start.
Certainly. Yeah, certainly. So within 60 days.
And our March meeting is within that time frame, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Everything's, yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other questions for Mitchell while we have him here? Going once, going twice. I see a lot of shaking of heads. All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank
appreciate you.
You
being on the hot seat there for a little bit.
Thank
you.
And appreciate it and look forward to working with you on
yep.
It. Okay. Flip back to our agenda here. So next, it's the lovely Get to Know the Library series. We have the Board of Trustee training. You'll be happy to know it's been completely revamped and clocks in under 9 minutes. So we're going to kick that off, and then we also have our annual fraud training, which we will do, which I think is a little bit longer, right, Lynn?
It's 8 minutes.
8 minutes. Look at that. Well, then 20 minutes will be done with our annual training, so we'll get that kicked off.
Trouble. That's right. Throw popcorn.
Is this the recorded version or is this?
It's a recorded
version. Good evening. This is Jennifer Doss, current CCPL Board President. And as part of our annual responsibilities, I'd like to take a few moments to review our governance role as trustees. This is a practical refresher to ensure we remain aligned, effective, and compliant with Ohio law. Under Ohio Revised Code 3375.32, this board has control and management of the Claremont County Public Library. That authority carries responsibility. We are stewards of a public institution funded by public dollars serving the community. We are a 7-member board, 4 position. We are a 7-member board. 4 positions are appointed by our county commissioners, and 3 positions are appointed by our county judges. We serve without compensation. Recent changes to Ohio law under House Bill 33, which became effective September 30, 2025, adjusted trustee terms from 7 years to 4 years for new appointments or renewals. Current board members, also called legacy terms, will continue to serve out their original 7-year terms. Currently, we have 4 standing committees, the Budget Committee, the Building Committee, the Bylaw and Policy Committee, and the Personnel Committee. Our committees allow deeper review, but authority still remains with the full board. So remember that while committees make the recommendations, the full board makes the actual decisions. Each board member serves on at least 1 committee, and annually, all board members sign our Statement of Expectations document to reinforce our shared standards. It's important to remember that our board's role is governance, not management. We have 2 direct reports, the director and the fiscal officer. And per Ohio law, we are also able to appoint a deputy fiscal officer if we so choose. The board oversees performance. We do not supervise other library staff nor run daily operations. We act as an advocate for and representative of the library system. The director supervises library staff, with the exception of the fiscal office. The fiscal officer manages finances and supervises the deputy fiscal officer and any other staff members that may be in the fiscal office. Both the director and the fiscal officer report to the board. Our oversight responsibility is one of the board's most important duties. We are stewards of public funds. The board doesn't do bookkeeping, but we are responsible for financial oversight and accountability. This slide outlines just some of the responsibilities of the board and of the fiscal officer. As a public entity, our primary legal counsel is the Claremont County Prosecutor's Office. The board may authorize outside counsel when needed, but trustees should not independently seek legal advice on behalf of the board. The board does not investigate operational matters. That responsibility belongs to management. A reminder that in the event an email is sent to the board's group email account, the board president will respond. If a board member is approached personally, please refer the concern to the board president and the library director. Consistent communication protects everyone. Our board board or committee discussions must occur in properly noticed public meetings. Avoid copying all trustees on emails discussing business. If a majority is deliberating outside of a meeting, that may violate the Open Meetings Act. Virtual meetings are permitted, but only within our adopted policy that aligns with requirements outlined in Ohio Revised Code 121.221. Assume written communications about board business could become public. Use only your library email and avoid using personal accounts for library business. In addition to public records compliance, Ohio law requires each public library to maintain a records commission under Ohio Revised Code 149.411. For our library, the records commission consists of the full board and the fiscal officer. We meet once each year to review and formally approve our records retention schedules and to authorize disposal of records in accordance with those schedules and with Ohio law. After the commission approves disposal, the fiscal officer submits the required RC2 forms to the Ohio History Connection and to the Auditor of State. That step ensures proper state-level documentation before records are destroyed. While this may feel procedural, it's an important compliance responsibility that supports transparency, accountability, and proper records management. When in doubt, disclose. Transparency protects both you and the board. Remember, this is public service. What makes a strong board? A strong board stays in its lane, works collaboratively, and focuses on the mission and public trust. As part of this training deck, we've included some reference slides. Here's a list of our current board members, their officer role, if applicable, how they were appointed, and when their current term ends. On this slide, you'll see a list of our current committees and associated committee members. Committee members are reappointed by the board president on an annual basis. This slide reflects the current CCPL organizational chart. This slide outlines a reminder on how the library is funded. The majority of funding comes from the Public Library Fund, or PLF. In 2026, the PLF operates under a new structure established by the Ohio General Assembly, shifting from a flexible percentage-based model to a fixed line item appropriation. Historically, the PLF received a set percentage of Ohio's General Revenue Fund, or GRF, tax receipts. However, for the 2026 and 2027 biennium, under House Bill 96, the state transitioned to a fixed dollar funding model. Note that before any funds reach local libraries, the state carves out approximately $10.3 million annually to fund other entities, including the State Library of Ohio, the Ohio Public Library Information Network, and the Library for the Blind. More funding for CCPL comes from Claremont County taxes. In 2008, the library passed a 0.9 mil operating levy. The library also has investments and has engaged RedTree to manage an investment portfolio on its behalf. And finally, some funding does come from library fees and fines, but those comprise the smallest portion of the library's revenue. This slide highlights pertinent regulatory guidance. Chapter 3375 of the Ohio Revised Code addresses regulations concerning libraries, specifically ORC Section 3375.40 sets the Board of Library Trustees' powers and duties. In addition, the Ohio Public Records and Open Meetings Laws, known as the Sunshine Laws, give Ohioans access to government meetings and records. The Ohio Attorney General's Office helps public officials and citizens understand their rights and responsibilities under these laws. This concludes our annual refresher training. I want to thank you for your service to the community and remind you that stewardship of public trust is both a responsibility and a privilege. I appreciate each one of you and do not take your commitment to the board lightly. Thank you for your attention during this presentation, and if you have any questions about this content, please don't hesitate to reach out to me because I'm always happy to help. Thank you.
I apologize for the technical difficulties. Lynn and I left this today and it was not fine, so thank you for just moving forward.
I think we just did the wrong version. Maybe.
Yeah, that's an issue with the projector software.
The projector was talking to the laptop.
It was working perfectly on the laptop.
I kept looking to see if your lips were moving. What is going on here? And then you were standing there, and I thought, okay, are you hesitating in syncopation? Or it was very nicely done, though.
Yes.
No, oh, shoot. I tried to catch you. Yeah.
No, you just should have showered.
I'm Auditor of State Keith Faber. This training is a result of a recently enacted law and is now required for nearly all Ohio public employees. This training will provide you with the tools necessary to detect and report fraud and maintain the strict ethical standards required by your position. Too often, my office is required to issue fines for recovery of taxpayer dollars or other sanctions against Ohio entities and employees that could have been avoided. This training will provide you with the knowledge to help you avoid these penalties associated with fiscal wrongdoing. More importantly, it will assist you in recognizing potential criminal activity by others and give you the information necessary to report to law enforcement or the auditor's special investigations unit. As public servants, we are expected to do our jobs with the utmost honesty as we serve Ohio's taxpayers. I thank you for your service to Ohioans. And if you have any questions after the training, please feel free to contact us at the auditor's office at either ohioauditor.gov or 1-866-FRAUD-OH. Thank you.
Welcome to the Ohio Auditor of State's training video on reporting fraud, waste, and abuse in government. As public employees, it's our responsibility to ensure that taxpayer dollars are used efficiently, effectively, and transparently. That requires a rigid adherence to the ethical behavior that taxpayers across Ohio have come to expect from us. The overwhelming majority of public employees come to work and do their jobs with the highest level of professionalism and pride. But on occasion, there are bad actors who take advantage of their access to public funds and resources. These types of behaviors are rare, but when they do occur, no matter how big or small, it severely erodes the public's trust in our work. Before we begin, here's a bit of background. The brief training you're about to receive is just one layer of a robust fraud reporting training that is required by law of all state and local government employees. Each public employee is required to receive this training during their initial onboarding and every 4 years thereafter. By learning the signs of fraud, knowing your responsibilities when fraudulent behavior in government occurs, and knowing how to report fraud to the appropriate authorities, you can play a key role in preventing loss of taxpayer resources. And as a public employee with an inside perspective to the day-to-day doings of government, you are the first line of defense in stamping out fraud, waste, and abuse. Let's begin by defining our three main categories: fraud, waste, and abuse, and then look at examples of each in the context of state and local government. First, fraud. Fraud in government refers to intentional deception or misrepresentation for personal gain or to deceive the public. This could include embezzlement, bribery, or falsifying documents, such as timesheets or financial statements. Let's look at an example. In 2019, An employee of Smith Village created fake invoices for services that were never provided. They arranged for a family member to receive the contract to provide those services. When the invoices were paid, the employee and their accomplice pocketed the money. This scheme lasted for 3 years before being discovered, resulting in losses totaling $30,000. Now let's look at waste. Waste in government occurs when resources are used carelessly or extravagantly without adequate oversight, resulting in unnecessary costs to taxpayers. This might include overpaying for goods or services, unnecessary spending on projects, or even an intentionally inefficient process for a routine task. Let's look at an example. The Office of Finance is looking to purchase new technology for its team. The department decided to purchase desktop PCs for all administrative employees, all of whom had already been issued laptops. As a result of this oversight, many employees decided they don't need the new machines, and the PCs end up in storage, unused and wasting taxpayer funds. If the Office of Finance had issued the machines only to employees who needed them, they could have saved money. And lastly, abuse. Abuse excludes fraud and noncompliance and involves actions that a prudent person would determine to be unreasonable based on the circumstances, such as requesting reimbursement for an expensive meal or asking an assistant to pick up dry cleaning during working hours. Let's look at an example. The director of communications frequently has his clothes dry cleaned. It's common practice that he sends his admin out once a week to the dry cleaners 20 minutes from the office. Not only should the director be responsible for his own laundry, but it is also obviously inappropriate to have the admin run errands on state time. It's important to note that the examples provided are not comprehensive or exhaustive definitions of fraud, waste, or abuse. But if something doesn't look right, it's probably worth looking into. It's crucial for us to remain vigilant and report any suspicions of fraud, waste, or abuse. Suspect fraud? Speak up. We'll do the rest. Let's take a moment to discuss how you can report suspected bad behavior to the Ohio Auditor's Special Investigation Unit. Ohio law requires that any known instance of fraud, waste, or abuse be reported to the Ohio Auditor of State. There are several options you can use to make a report. You can report online through the auditor's website. Make a call to our Special Investigations Unit and speak to our intake specialists. This may require you to leave a message outside of business hours, but our staff will contact you. Send an email to our Special Investigations Unit that details the information you want to report. Make a report through mail, sending our Special Investigations Unit a narrative and any substantiating documentation you may have. All public organizations have a working relationship with staff at the Ohio Auditor's Office. If you suspect fraud, waste, or abuse, you could make a report to a member of our audit team. In this case, they could assist you in providing the necessary information to our Special Investigations Unit. Anyone who makes a report to the Auditor of State's Special Investigation Unit should expect one of our intake specialists or investigators to reach out to them. The more information that you can provide, the greater we're able to thoroughly investigate your claim. Remember, making the report is the first step in stamping out unethical and illegal behavior in government. It's important to note that public employees are protected against disciplinary action or retaliation from their employer for making a reasonable and good faith report of suspected fraud, theft in office, or misuse or misappropriation of public money. That means your good faith report of suspected fraud should not impact your role or status as a government employee. Thank you for taking the time to watch this important training video. By working together to detect and prevent fraud, waste, and abuse, we can ensure that taxpayer dollars are used responsibly, effectively, and transparently. Remember, it's up to all of us to uphold the integrity of state and local government in Ohio.
Lights are coming back on.
There is a sign-in sheet going around for the fraud training that the auditor requires me to keep that on file.
So that document said there's something that we're required to take that's longer than this every 4 years.
Not us, the employees.
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 And we could probably argue that we don't have to sit through that 8-minute training every year, but you got a board president who likes compliance, so I think it's not a bad idea to spend 8 minutes refreshing us, especially since our schedule is we have a board member drop off, or we did have a schedule where we had a board member transition or change every year. So
the fiscal office also likes it because I think it's good for the staff to see that the board is getting the same information that they are and have the same avenues to report things if they thought something was going on. So,
and we
I think it's good for the staff to see that.
Yeah. We are dedicated to doing things the
and
right
we,
way.
We may make a mistake in the fiscal office, but we take fraud very seriously. We don't intentionally make any of those kind of errors. Unintentionally.
All right, guys. So thank you for sitting through those two trainings. This is part of our annual housekeeping item on the agenda. So we had our Board of Trustees training. We've got our fraud training. The annual statement of expectations was circulated earlier in the meeting. I think many, if not all of you, have already signed that and returned it to Chris. The sheet is making its way around for the fraud training. That'll go back to Melanie.
Make one trip. Give it.
When you're signing things?
Yes.
And then we also have the Board of Trustees meeting dates in calendar year 2026. Those were in your packet. The remaining of the year, it's the third Monday of the month, since we have our holidays out of the way. And then we also have the document about the email reminders. And that is just, you know, do not reply all, do not use your personal email. And we kind of touched on that in the BOT training as well. Any questions about annual housekeeping? Oh, wait.
So
Chris wants to add on.
We no longer link the library Fastmail accounts to your personal email. Everybody who's been on this uses the Fastmail account directly. For those of you who might still utilize that forwarding, I recommend eliminating that and just starting to use Fastmail either directly online, or they have a really good app. And that way, when it gets forwarded and you reply, you're not replying back from your personal email address. Because that happens sometimes if you're getting it forwarded. So if you have any questions about that, Lynn can handle taking that on and unlinking those records. Their emails, sorry. I'm still Roger.
The only other thing I wanted to mention with regard to housekeeping items, something we started in 2026 is that whenever we have one of our committee meetings scheduled, that committee meeting invite will be sent out to all board members in the event that you want to attend. You wouldn't be attending as a non-committee member, but if you have an interest in that particular committee meeting, you're welcome to attend. I think in the past, we were siloed within just those committee members, and if someone may have had an interest in attending a building committee meeting, they didn't know it was happening. This way, it's going to go out to everyone if you want to attend. The scheduling, though, will not be predicated on non-committee member schedules. So it just gives the opportunity of all board members to attend committee meetings if they want to. I hope that made sense. It made better sense in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I understood it.
Okay, good. Good, good. I haven't had a lot of caffeine this evening, so I'm trying not to talk as much, but here I go. I think the next item on the agenda that we're going to do, we're going to move up our executive session. So you guys had to sit through a couple of meetings. We'll get to get up and stretch our legs a little bit, go back for executive session. So what I'm looking for is a motion to move into executive session pursuant to the Ohio Revised Code Section 121.22G1, which is considering the appointment and employment of a public employee. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Mr. Ramos makes a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Bach. Ms. Bach seconds. Thank you. May I have a roll call vote?
Mr.
Ms. Doss?
Yes.
Mr. Ramos?
Yes.
Ms. Waite?
Yes.
Ms. Cosica?
Yes.
Mr. Humphrey?
Yes.
Ms. Bach?
Yes.
Ms. Schluter?
Yes.
All right, show us going into executive session at 7 p.m., 1900 hours, please. Stretch your legs. We'll be quick. We would like the director and the assistant director. Okay. All right, y'all.